Radio Prague News.
Dutch nationals who attacked a Prague waiter are charged with attempted murder. Tick-borne encephalitis cases triple in South Moravia. And archaeologists remove the remains of a presumed premiseled prince, Otto I. The charges against two Dutch nationals who brutally attacked a Prague waiter in April have been upgraded to attempted murder. The men had originally been charged with manslaughter, but medical experts assessing the case said the prolonged brutality of the assault had been life-threatening. If convicted, the Dutchmen face up to 18 years in prison. The reported number of cases of tick-borne encephalitis in South Moravia has more than tripled. By the end of July, 38 cases of the potentially fatal disease had been reported, up from a dozen cases in the summers of 2017 and 2016. There is no cure for encephalitis, but only about 1 in 4 Czechs have themselves vaccinated against it. The Czech Republic has 5 times as many cases as does neighboring Austria, where 90% of the population takes this precaution. Czech state-controlled utility ČEZ's second-quarter revenues and profit both dropped sharply despite increased electricity production. This was due to higher wholesale electricity and emissions prices after forward-selling production at lower levels. ČEZ said, however, that the hit from its hedging operations should dissipate in the second half of the year. Interior Minister Jan Hamáček has proposed the budget for the state-controlled postal service be tripled to 1.5 billion crowns. Česká pošta, which employs nearly 30,000 people, has more than 1,300 vacancies due to low wages, the minister said during a visit on Tuesday to the service's biggest processing center. Last year, the average salary at Česká pošta was about 5,000 crowns below the national average, Mr. Hamáček said. The tabloid Blesk has lost some 33,000 readers in the first half of 2018, but it is still the most widely read newspaper, with a circulation of 926,000, according to a new survey. The broadsheet Mladá fronta Dnes had 569,000 readers during that period, a drop in circulation of 3,000 year on year. In third place was the left-leaning Daily Pravo, followed by the Daily Sport, and the right-leading national newspaper, Lidové noviny. Prague archaeologists have removed the nearly 1,000-year-old remains of what are believed to be the premiseled princes from the St. Stephen's cloisters in Olomouc. It is believed that among the interned skeletons there are those of Otto I, the prince of Olomouc from 1061 until his death, and his wife Euphemia, a daughter of King Bela I of Hungary. Researchers discovered a number of coffins at the Olomouc site only last year, and comprehensive testing on the remains has yet to be carried out. And finally, the weather. Rain is in the forecast on Wednesday for the regions of Pilsen, Karlovy Vary, Pardubice, and Hradec Králové. Elsewhere, including in Prague, it should be only partly cloudy, with daytime highs of 35 degrees Celsius. I'm Brian Kennedy, and that's the news for now.
You are listening to Radio Prague, the international service of Czech radio, with me, Ruth Franková. Coming up in today's program, an English language film series called Identity in the City is currently underway parallel to Prague Pride. We speak to the organizers of the event. An exhibition at Prague's Old Town Hall brings together almost 200 photographs documenting the Soviet-led invasion of Czechoslovakia. And we visit a place in Moravia where you can see real mummies. All that coming up, so please stay with us. Queer film festival Mezipatra returns in November, but already this week the organization is hosting Identity in the City, an English language film series running parallel to Prague Pride. Morgan Childs spoke with Mezipatra director Pavel Bicek to learn about the week-long event and why his organization has endured in the Czech Republic for nearly 2 decades.
The annual Mezipatra Festival presents around 100 films focused on LGBTQ issues, but organizers have selected just four to show at Kasarna Karlin this week in conjunction with Pride. In the gallery space of a Patra Cafe, the organization's community headquarters, Bicek explained how they selected the roster of films.
It's summer, it's hot, and people do not necessarily can cope with some harder or some art films and so on. So the programming is rather focused on different kinds of families, on lighter stories, on stories of love, and on the kind of films which the viewers can enjoy in summer in the Prague Pride Week.
Each film in the series is accompanied by a discussion, and on the final night of the program, the conversation highlights the experience of queer foreigners in Prague. I asked Bicek about the decision to put the spotlight on expats.
We think that the view of them on the queer life in Prague can be very different than ours, and it can be a certain look into the mirror and, a critical view on how we live here and how the gay life actually is in Prague. For example, holding hands in public is not really common here, and the life is just different. So we are interested in how queer expats look at the life in Prague.
While this is only the eighth installment of Pride, Mezi Patra has existed for 19 years, which, according to Bicek, makes it the longest-running queer event in the Czech Republic. After nearly a decade with the festival and 3 years as its director, he says Mezi Patra has evolved along with the Czech Republic.
The LGBT life is changing a lot, I think. And of course, it is very much connected to how much visible we are, how much visible queer people are. Also, last year at the festival, the theme was Be Your Own Champion. Because when we were growing up, we didn't have any queer role models around us. We were alone, basically, because there were no gay people on television, there were no gay politicians, there were no gay singers. Of course, there were, but they weren't out. We are trying to be visible, we are trying to be our own champions, and we want to be the role models for the generations after us. I think we are educating the viewers, and we are so happy because the viewers that come to Mezi Patra are very open-minded already. And I think, we can do really good programming and daring programming because our viewers can take it.
Mezi Patra director Pavel Bicek talking there to my colleague Morgan Childs. With the 50th anniversary of the Soviet-led invasion of Czechoslovakia fast approaching, an exhibition just launched at Prague's Old Town Hall brings together almost 200 photographs documenting that time. Most belong in private archives, and a number are being shown in public for the first time ever. Ian Willoughby has more.
You can't explain them anything. They are like the wall. You say them why you came. They said we are your brothers.
A Czech student discusses Warsaw Pact soldiers in an interview for the BBC recorded days after the crushing of the Prague Spring began on August 21st, 1968. Those dramatic and extremely traumatic events are captured in Soviet Invasion August 1968, an exhibition that's just opened at Prague's Old Town Hall. Among the many striking pictures on display is of a group of young people carrying a bloodied flag through the centre of the city. It was taken by Libusha Kindrova, whose daughter Dana Kindrova is one of the organisers of the exhibition.
Of course, the most dramatic moments took place in front of Czechoslovak radio. People were trying to prevent the station from being occupied because, as we know, the media has a huge influence. The blood on the flag is from one of the victims, and the people in the picture are carrying it down Wenceslas Square, probably to Old Town Square.
Dana Kindrova was 13 at the time and had accompanied her parents to the city centre.
I found it very emotional, of course, because everybody was hoping the Prague Spring would continue, but now it was over.
There are around 190 images in the exhibition, the majority from Prague. They represent the work of more than three dozen photographers, most of them professional, and a number of the pictures have never been displayed in public before. Some capture bitterly humorous improvised signs, reading, for instance, "Drink your vodka, not our blood." But most affecting are the photos that show central Prague turned into a virtual war zone, including billowing smoke, flattened barricades and ordinary people being ferried on stretchers. Among those at Monday's opening was Igor, who was 20 years old in August 1968. He told Czech Radio he'd been at the top of Wenceslas Square on the first day of what became a two-decade occupation.
There were lots of tanks. People even said they could be a load test for the metro system when they drove onto the square. People began gathering spontaneously. Nobody had to be persuaded. I sometimes thought, Christ, they're brave. I saw guys jumping up onto the tanks, piercing the fuel tanks and setting them alight.
The photos on show don't end in August 1968, but the following spring, also capturing events such as the funeral of Jan Palach and celebrations of an ice hockey victory over the Soviets in March 1969.
Ian Willoughby with that report, and the exhibition Soviet Invasion August 1968 runs until the 30th of this month. Just a reminder that you are listening to Radio Prague, the international service of Czech Radio. Now, there is a place in Moravia where you can see real mummies. They are not as old as those in Egypt, but old enough to generate genuine scientific interest among anthropologists at Masaryk University in Brno. Vít Pohanka made the trip to eastern Czechia and found out that quite soon one of the mummies might be brought back to virtual life.
Still on the west bank of the river, but farther north, come to the Valley of the Kings and the City of the Dead, site of a great royal tomb.
To most people in the world, mummies, or the mummified human bodies, are inseparably connected with Egypt. And no wonder. Travel films, like this one produced in the 1950s by the now defunct American TWA Airlines, promoted the pyramids and especially the Valley of the Kings as the place to go if you wanted to see the exciting relics of ancient cultures.
Here was made the greatest discovery of Egyptian archaeology. King Tutankhamun, whose tomb was opened in 1922 to disclose a treasure of relics from Egypt's golden age of antiquity.
The discoveries by the famous British archaeologist Howard Carter in the 1920s started a century of interest in ancient Egyptian culture. The mummies of the Nile Valley somehow personified this magic world. They overshadowed the fact that you can actually find burial places with uniquely preserved human and animal bodies in other parts of the world, including Brno, in southeastern part of Czechia. Kateřina Hlouchová is the manager of the Capuchin Crypt of Brno. She is showing me around this place where the members of the Order of Friars, Minor Capuchin, as they were officially called, were buried in the 17th and 18th centuries. And even though these mummies are relatively young compared to those of ancient Egyptian kingdoms, they are to this day fascinating witnesses of their customs and way of life.
Visitors can see two rows of friars clothed in the remains of their typical brown habit. They were not buried in coffins, but laid directly on the bare ground with just a couple of bricks under their heads. That was a typical burial custom in the Capuchin order, in line with the philosophy of St. Francis of Assisi, their founder. He criticized the Catholic Church's tendency to accumulate worldly property and wealth. This is a kind of thin red line going through the whole history of the order. So up to this day, if anyone enters the order, they have to promise to observe the principles of purity, poverty and obedience. By lying on the bare ground, they demonstrate they do not need even a coffin, that this would be a needless luxury.
The Capuchin Crypt of Brno was used until 1784. It was then that the Holy Roman Emperor and the ruler of Habsburg lands, Joseph II, initiated numerous reforms intended to modernize life of his subjects. One of his edicts, or patents as they were called, concerned burial practices. It banned burying dead within the city limits in order to prevent the possibility of spreading diseases. But by then, some 200 people had been already buried in the Brno crypt, and remains of many of them survived to this day.
Mohly se zachovat díky tomu, že tady byl vybudovaný důmyslný systém průduchových otvorů, který...
They could be preserved thanks to an elaborate system of ventilating air ducts. It worked very reliably and effectively dehydrated the bodies. It was complemented by a favorable geological composition of the soil onto which the bodies were laid. These two factors together caused the mummification that, as we can see even today, was very successful.
Těch těl, která byla velmi úspěšná.
But it's not just the Capuchin friars that you can find in their crypt. As Kateřina Hlouchová explains, the order actually awarded burial space to some of the eminent Brno families that somehow supported them or otherwise helped them.
Je to rodina architekta Mořice Grima. I když tu architekturu v podstatě nikdy nevystudoval, ale...
This is the family of architect Maurice Grimm. Although he never studied architecture, he actually designed many beautiful buildings together with his son Francis Anthony, who was buried on his father's right-hand side. They were both very strong personalities and to a large extent shaped the way in which Baroque Brno was built.
Architektonického Brna.
The mummies of Brno are not just some sort of a macabre tourist attraction, strange curiosity for general traveling public. They are a subject of genuine scientific interest and study. I was invited to the Department of Anthropology of the Masaryk University of Brno by assistant professor Petra Urbanová. She promised an expert explanation of the mummy phenomenon for a layperson like me.
What we have here, it's mummified human remains. The process of mummification occurs when there's a rapid process of dehydration of body remains or body tissues. And as a result of that, some parts of the human body, the tissues, they are not inclined to decompose rapidly. They are preserved.
What sort of conditions need to be preserved or need to be in place, rather, so that the body is mummified, preserved in such a way?
There must be some specific favorable conditions for the mummifications to occur. Specifically, there must be dry air, or more specifically, dry constant airflow for the body, for the body tissues to dehydrate rapidly.
Why did it happen here in Brno? Why didn't it happen, you know, in other places? Why is it such a rare occurrence?
It happens in other places, but for the Central Europe, it's extremely rare. And it's a combination of constant air in a crypt, in a Capuchin crypt, and also some geological background, the lack of nitrogen in the environment, And as I said, the constant airflow.
Long time ago, back in the 1980s even, I was here with a friend of mine who happens to be an American literature professor from New York. And when he saw the mummies here in Brno, he wouldn't believe me that these were not models. He said, this is impossible. I mean, it couldn't be preserved for such a long time when there is such an aggressive atmosphere these days. You know, at that time, actually, it was possible to walk nearly among, you know, the body remains. Mm-hmm. So how come that they can be preserved even now when the atmosphere, one would think, you know, the pollution is aggressive and people are walking around bringing it in?
Well, we are still underground. And nowadays, the environment, the place, the room around the crypt is preserved, is isolated, I would say, from the visitors and people around. So, and they are perfectly curated, I would say. But to your question, the process of decay, it continues. So in a couple of years, we will see the process of degradation. So in this sense, For now, the rate of preservation is extremely good and is excellent. But as we go on, it will decay. It will degrade.
In 100, 200 years, 300 years?
I'm not sure. I wouldn't say that. But it will continue and we will see some modifications and changes.
And there are no plans, inject something, to mummify, to help, the natural mummification.
As I said, they are well curated.
What does it mean, well curated?
Taken care of and restored. Gradually, all of the mummies are being restored as we speak.
Using some chemicals?
Yeah, using chemicals, using mechanical techniques and so on. But I'm not an expert in that area, but they are well curated.
What is the significance for your branch of science of such mummified remains? Is it more of it's a freak kind of accident of history, or does it really help you to understand the time when these people were buried?
It sort of is a freak, but a freak that helps us to understand other parts of the human body and parts that we usually and frequently don't get to see. So soft tissue, skin ridges, for example, fine details of the human skin. These are the sources of information that we need to make conclusions about human bodies, about human burial rites, customs, way of living, all sort of things.
Both experts and the Capuchin Order would like to popularize the unique crypt. And when it comes to that, there's no better way of doing it than to use the services of probably the most famous person buried in the crypt, Baron Franz von der Trenck.
Je spojen s Marií Terezií, vstoupil do jejich služeb a podílel se na úspěšném.
He entered the services of Maria Theresa when the Empress was fighting the War of the Austrian Succession. His little army was effective but committed many gruesome atrocities as well. So Baron Trenck ended up a prisoner for life here in Spielberg Castle in Brno, convicted of high crimes including looting and murdering innocent people. It was only at the end of his life that he started seeking salvation with the help of the Capuchin friars, one of the main offshoots of the Franciscan order. They regularly visited the prisoners of Spielberg and helped Baron Trenck see that he had not led a righteous life. He eventually became very religious, asked to be buried here in the crypt, having bequeathed all his worldly possessions to the Capuchins order.
Ve prospěch bratří kapucínů.
And the Department of Anthropology of the Masaryk University in Brno is now working on bringing Baron Trenck back to life, in virtual reality, that is.
We are in the process of building facial reconstruction for the Baron Trenck, which is based on skull morphology. And so far, we have examined the body, the mummified body, using CT scan, which allows us to generate 3D models, 3D skulls, skeletons, one skull in this case, and specific bones in his body. We'll continue with that. The aim of the project is to reconstruct the whole body and to use modern technology to make him walk, to make him interact with visitors in the exposition, for example.
In virtual reality somehow.
Exactly.
What will it look like? Kids will be running around, with something on their eyes, some eyewear?
We haven't decided yet. We have virtual reality techniques in our lab. We are trying to come up with something that would be suitable for exposition because it's supposed to be a large-scale exhibition, so we have to think of that a little bit. But we'll see.
Assistant Professor of Anthropology Petra Urbanová. It will take some time, but pretty soon she and her colleagues will be able to state that the mummy of Brno is truly back. Vít Pohanka, Czech Radio, Moravia.
And that feature, which was first broadcast in March this year, brings us to the end of our program here on Radio Prague. If you have any comments, then please send them to us. You can contact us by email at english@radio.cz or on Facebook and Twitter. We'll be glad to hear from you. But that's all for now from me, Ruth Franková. Thank you very much for joining us and goodbye.